Well, we are certainly all celebrating over here. Chris Hadfield, thanks very much for being with us. I think it's a great occasion, not just for India, but the international space communities that have really been looking at this mission very closely. In simple terms, why is it difficult to put a lander into a soft landing on the surface of the moon, or for that matter, in the future, possibly a planet?
Thank you for having me on. Imagine if you got in your car and you put it on sort of remote control and asked it to drive all the way across India and then up into the mountains. And then when you got within the last few hundred meters of your destination, if then you had to close your eyes and hope the car was going to properly get into a really narrow garage. I mean, it's just so complicated to build the technology that will allow all of those things to happen. And the learning that was gathered during Chandrayaan-1 and then Chandrayaan-2, they were the mothers of success of Chandrayaan-3. And to now have it safely and successfully sitting on the surface, it's a great moment to celebrate. But now the real work begins. You know, this is just the door safely being opened for everything that we can set out to try and discover on the moon itself.
We'll talk about that in a moment. But when it comes to space and space-based engineering, how is this all about a crawl, walk, run approach? That there are bound to be failures, and then you need to recover from those failures, invest more, learn from your mistakes, and carry on. I think that's what ISRO has been trying to do pretty hard.
And they've done it so successfully. I've flown in space 3 times, so I have helped fly 3 different rocket ships. Everything worth doing in life has risk, even if it's just we're sending a robot into space. But if something's worth doing, then your job is not to be afraid and not to cross your fingers, but to figure out those risks and be willing to fail over and over again as you try and get closer and closer to success. And there were so many thousands of simulations that ISRO ran. And then, obviously, with Chandrayaan-1 and Chandrayaan-2, they learned a tremendous amount. But today, it's like harvest day. You know, after all of the planting and cultivating and all of that time, today India can really pluck the fruit of all of that labor and take tremendous pride, as Prime Minister Modi was saying, in just what they have achieved and the leadership and the success, and that everybody can aspire to the moon and beyond.
Chris, you know, Chandrayaan-1 detected the presence of water molecules on the moon, in the atmosphere of the moon, and therefore there was a sense that a lot more needed to be done in terms of a deep investigation. By landing a rover or a lander on the South Pole region of the moon, is there a chance at getting some real science out? Because if there is more water, then it helps all of humanity.
Yes, Chandrayaan-3 here with the Vikram lander, they've landed at 70 degrees south. Not all the way to the South Pole. If they had landed at 70 degrees south on Earth, they would have sort of landed on the shore of Antarctica. Mm-hmm. So that's how far south they are. And in the shadows of the moon, that's where the water can stay permanently. So as the little rover rides down its ramp and starts to go around and really test the actual soil, we've never been to this part of the moon before. No previous lander or rover has been this far south. And so the opportunity for discovery is really high. And they have some really good sensors mounted on the lander and the rover. And we're not going to answer all of the questions. It's trial and error. Every single mission gives us a little more information, teaches us something, and allows us to build even further. And there's a lot of numbers after 3. You know, this was Chandrayaan-3, but we still got 4 and 5 and 6 available to us. So it'll be really interesting to see what India and the Indian people and ISRO chooses to do next. And of course, the Chinese Space Agency and the American Space Agency, NASA, they're watching really closely to try and also benefit from these world-leading discoveries that India has set itself on a path with a successful landing today.
I think one of the key hallmarks of ISRO has been frugal space engineering. And there are a couple of examples of that. Our mission to Mars, when we put a satellite around Mars, was a slingshot effort. We did, certainly didn't have the engines to get to Mars in our rockets. And therefore, we managed to do that through some fancy mathematical calculations. And even in Chandrayaan, we had to slingshot Chandrayaan off the Earth and to catch the gravity off the moon and then bring it down to a lower altitude on the moon. How would you look at or assess that science and the complexity that it involves?
I really respect the way that India has accomplished these things. They have tried to take the money that they've been trusted with, the India Space and Research Organization, take the money that they've been trusted with and do the absolute best that they possibly can with it. And the amount of money compared to everything else, obviously, that India needs to spend their money on to take care of all the Indian people is so incredibly tiny. In this year's budget, 5% of the budget goes to food and transportation and distribution. And it's, I looked up the number, it is 0.017%, like 0.01% of the budget that went to land on the moon. So the balance is really important. And great congratulations to the engineers and scientists and leaders at ISRO for the amount of accomplishment that they are getting for the small amount of India's federal budget that they're able to spend. And what it's also doing, I work with Indian companies, a company like Dhruva Space, and they are now able to move in and form profitable businesses because of the leadership and all of the lessons that have been learned from ISRO over the last very frugal decades. So it's a very smart way to conduct space business, and I'm confident that that not only ISRO is going to continue to benefit from it, but all of the hundreds of fledgling Indian space companies are now going to follow that same example.
Chris, you've of course commanded the International Space Station, and we have a crewed mission to orbit the Earth. It's called Gaganyaan. That'll happen in quite a few months from now, but you know, they're doing trials ahead of the actual crewed mission. Do you foresee that resulting in possibly an Indian space station? The Chinese have done it. The International Space Station already exists. Is that the logical way forward?
Well, I think it's really important to say, what are our goals? What are we trying to accomplish? I think for India to have the capability to launch their own citizens into space, it's sort of like 100 years ago, should India have the capability to train their own pilots and to fly their own airplanes? Or should we let the other countries benefit from that, for all the benefits of building and creating the whole aerospace industry? And so what should India's role be? To have the capability to not only train astronauts, but also to build spaceships that can safely take people to space and back, that is a really important step. But you're right, where do they go next? Should they be part of some other country's international space station program, like the ones that I went to? Or should India maybe build a small space station sort of as a learning tool and a laboratory in orbit? Or should India choose, like was signed recently, to be part of the Artemis program?
Yeah.
And now a very proud and leading part of the Artemis program, having landed on the moon, more of a partner than just part of it. And maybe that may be the way that after India has had a chance to get their own astronauts into space, they can now cooperatively work for Indians to go to the moon, orbit the moon, and eventually, just like Vikram, to put their feet onto the moon. All of that is what's coming in the future. And all of that took a really big step today with Chandrayaan-3.
You know, I found it interesting that one of the ISRO scientists today actually said that they will target Mars in the future. We've had a satellite of Mars. NASA's got a couple of really incredible rovers down on Mars. We followed those missions very closely. But the technology for landing is obviously a lot more difficult, a lot more sophisticated. But again, on the basis of having soft landed on the surface of the moon, do you believe that that is an important engineering achievement which can lead India to perhaps thinking about getting a rover or a lander onto Mars in the future?
Well, let's just do a quick count of the number of nations on Earth that have sent something successfully to Mars and have landed on the moon. I mean, it is a tiny little number, right? It's 4 out of the almost 200 nations on Earth and in all of human history. So if you're looking at which country now may next be able to take those next steps, people to the moon, but also safely landing and exploring Mars, I mean, India has set itself up very well to make that a next objective. And Mars has an atmosphere.
Yes.
Mars has a weak magnetic field. Mars has abundant water on the surface. And so if there's any place in our solar system that might have had life, to see if we're alone or not, Mars is the obvious destination. So the moon is important as a learning and stepping stone, but obviously the long-term thoughts are, how can we eventually get more complicated robots and eventually people to Mars? And it seems crazy, but India landing on the moon, that seemed crazy just a few years ago, and yet here we are.
Absolutely. It's been wonderful speaking to you, Chris. You know, you're a hero for a lot of us, and I keep listening in to that wonderful YouTube video of yours singing in the International Space Station. Absolutely incredible. It's wonderful speaking to you. Thank you very much indeed.
Congratulations to everybody at ISRO and everybody right across India. It's a very great day.
Thanks very much.